probably the single most important issue. Well, the economy and energy really are intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes back to energy after all, doesn't it? And so we really have expanded the context of the show because alternative energy, free energy, is the watchword, or the watch phrase, I guess, as we head into the next decade. And to that end, we're delighted to have on the program an astronomer and physicist to discuss the idea of free energy. Is it a dream? Is it a reality? Is it already here? And also, topics picked up in his book, Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion. A great pleasure to have on the program, Dr. Paul LaViolette. Hello, Dr. Violette.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Well, where do we begin? Let's talk about the more basic types of alternative energy that you address in the book. And I mean, we've heard about hydrogen obviously before, the push for a hydrogen economy, but is hydrogen really still on the still on the block as an option, because it is very volatile, is it not, hydrogen gas?
Yeah, well, unless you keep it away from oxygen, with oxygen it becomes very explosive. But there's some technologies, for example, you can get energy out of plain water. In fact, there's a company in England that's working on producing water heaters for homes where they would get the energy out of water. There's also a company, Blacklight, in New Jersey that's working on this sort of thing.
So you're producing, like, electrolytes using, what, an aluminum plate or something?
You put in a potassium carbonate catalyst in the water. You put some electricity through electrodes that are designed a special way, and they're able to induce the orbital electrons, I'm getting a little technical here, understand, to drop into energy levels below what physicists believe is the lowest level, in other words, to go even lower. And so the current physics theories don't explain why this energy would be there, but so if you go to a new approach, new way of visualizing this, you can understand why this would be. And the thing is that it's our concepts that keep us from developing these new energy sources. Physics says it's impossible, and even the patent office is influenced by the physics standard physics views, to the point where if somebody had a new idea that violated some of the sacrosanct laws of physics, even though it was going to help humanity, they would prevent the person from patenting it, or they would classify it.
Well, yes, that's the old guard standing in the way. What do they say about science? It progresses one death at a time, right? Once we get those the old guard out of the way, I guess. Dr. Paul LaViolette, listen, we'll take a quick time out, come back, and continue to discuss alternative energy and anti-gravity propulsion, Tesla, UFOs, and aerospace. Classified aerospace technology. Victor Vigiani in studio from Exopolitics Toronto. Back in a moment with the Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB. Victor Vigiani with me in studio from Exopolitics Toronto. The first and third Wednesday of every month. For the full 3 hours, we talk UFO disclosure, alternative energy on the program. And with us is physicist, astronomer, Dr. Paul LaViolette. And the book is Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion. We should also mention the website, www.etheric.com/starburst/starburst.html. We'll link to that on the site so you can just click and away you go. Victor?
There's a lot of discussion, Paul, about magnetic motors, and I know that it's a bit of a leap from the hydrogen concept that we were talking about earlier, but could you talk to us a little bit about the magnetic effect of how energy can be displaced or at least used within a magnetic motor?
Well, you're referring to like the magnetic energy converter?
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, with John Searle's device, and it's been duplicated in Russia, the idea of you have these magnets whirling around a stator, sort of a magnetic ring, and the rollers just roll around the ring. And you find that they generate electric current going radially outward into the rollers, and that current also makes the rollers move. There's a couple effects there. And so it turns into a dynamo. If you get it going above a certain critical speed, it can actually become self-powering. And the question is, where does the energy come from? Researchers, when they were testing this in Russia, they found that it was actually refrigerating the environment. There was a series of walls, invisible walls, where energy was being sucked out of the air. The temperature is actually lower in those areas. And it's possibly using a concept called phase conjugation in physics, which means it's able to actually extract energy, reverse entropy in its vicinity, actually move energy from the environment into the motor, which really would be an ideal technology for avoiding global warming, because you're cooling the environment when you're generating electricity.
Yeah, so if let's translate this into a real-life situation for people that are listening. I have a house in Toronto, and it's on the grid, and all of a sudden I have a magnetic motor access to my home. What does that mean to me as a member of a community who's on an electric grid within a huge system within the Ontario framework of electricity? If I have this magnetic motor in my house, or at least access to something that gives me this type of energy, what does that mean for me as an energy user?
Well, you're going to be independent of anything that might happen to the grid. We know, like, blackouts and so on affect us, and we have to get out our gas-powered motors with generators to power our refrigerators while the blackout's going. With this, you don't have to worry. I mean, it's going to run as long as you have it. So this is something that would be even a security measure. If there was something, like some people are predicting, doomsday scenarios that could happen. Not to say something would happen in our lifetime, but if it did, this would be the ideal way to prepare each house to be energy independent.
Is this theoretical, or is this up and running? This is practical. We could have them out. If someone got behind this, they could be commercially available within a decade, or what are we talking here?
Right. If the government stopped suppressing these technologies, and I don't know to point to which part of the government would do this, but we could have this going in 5 years, for sure.
All right. I just wanted to
see. People that are working on this are in some ways fearful of being suppressed, and they do it very low profile.
All right. We've got news awaiting at the bottom of the hour. Dr. Paul LaViolette stays with us, Victor Vigiani as well, as we head into the next half hour discussing advanced anti-gravity propulsion systems and alternative energy. Back with more of the Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB. In the next hour, we'll reach out to Japan and speak with Neil Gould, who is the founder of Exopolitics Hong Kong, and find out what it's like pushing for UFO disclosure in communist China. And then at midnight, Grant Cameron will join us, a UFO researcher, and talk about the implications of John Podesta being named to the Barack Obama transition team. Podesta, again, a staunch UFO disclosure advocate. Right now, Dr. Paul LaViolette stays with us, the author of Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion, and the website, again, www.etheric.com/starbust.html.
It's just etheric.com.
We don't need the Starbust.
You don't need the forward slash.
Excellent. That makes it much easier. Thank you, Paul. www.etheric.com. Now, these things that you're talking about very quickly, hydrogen or magnetic type systems, are these transition, simply transition energy systems, or could they be the be-all and end-all, do you think?
the be-all and end-all, basically. You wouldn't need fossil fuels any longer or nuclear energy.
Well, I was thinking maybe beyond that even. People talk about zero-point energy. I mean, is that the end game? Once we have harnessed, hydrogen and these magnetic systems, we need not worry about going any further?
Not further in terms of energy research, you mean?
Well, we always want to research. But, I mean, with this... I guess the hydrogen economy that people talk about, I mean, for you, is that the holy grail?
Well, no. For example, you wouldn't need to go into a filling station and fill up with hydrogen. Your car would be like a hybrid that would have a motor continually charging your battery. It would be an electric car. But it wouldn't need fuel, basically.
Okay. All right, Victor, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just want to find out some of your thoughts about the so-called B-2 bomber that we know that has somehow been able to, at least in the common vernacular, utilize some sort of anti-gravitic technologies. And I wonder if you could share with us some of your thoughts about what this B-2 bomber is, and what kind of technologies does it use to propel itself in terms of possibly sharing that technology with the common acronym UFO?
Well, it's sort of like an intermediate anti-gravity technology in the sense it's one that they at least have disclosed its existence to everyone. They just haven't disclosed its propulsion system. And it, even though it has jets to get it off the ground, once it's airborne, the pilot flips a switch, goes into electric drive mode, uses what's called field propulsion, and that's gets into the words like electrogravitics or electric propulsion, field propulsion. Designed, and this is from disclosures that have been published in like Aviation Week and Space Technology. Some Black Project scientists talked about the B-2 electrifying the leading edge of its wing and dumping the ions into its exhaust stream of the opposite charge. What this does, see, when I first came across this article, I realized that they were describing Townsend Brown's patent. He got a patent on this way back in the 60s. And that Northrop had been doing research on this in the late 60s. What this does is it sets up a huge electric field around the craft, a positive charge in front in the bow shock that goes around the craft, and negative charges in its exhaust. And this creates unbalanced electric forces on the craft, which move it forward, in addition to a gravitic effect, because... Einstein's theory doesn't predict this. In fact, it only predicts a single polarity for gravity. But actual experimentation indicates there are two polarities to gravity, and they're associated with a positive and electric charge. So like a positive charge would be gravity repulsive effect. A negative charge would be gravity repulsive effect, and positive would be gravity attractive effect. So if you can... create these space charges, positive and negative, around the craft, you can create also a gravitic field that can act on the craft.
So you're talking about a situation where a craft is actually pushed and pulled? Is that too simplistic?
Yeah. That's right. And as it moves forward, it carries the field it's generating along with it. So it's sort of like pulling itself by its bootstraps. And as it gains speed, eventually it can actually shut off its jet, the fuel to its jet engines, and just run on scooped air. You know, the B-2, if you read some of the information about it, it scoops a lot of air, which the military has said, that's just to cool the exhaust. But in reality, it can run on scooped air alone once it gets going.
What sort of speeds are we talking about here, Dr. Laviolette?
It could go Mach 13, probably. It's just they don't talk about that. They say, it's subsonic. That's bullshit.
Mach 13. 13 times the speed of sound.
Yeah, once it gets up in the upper, I mean, it can go above the ionosphere. It's designed as a spacecraft, I believe.
So the reports of it flying to Iraq in an hour are true?
If those are reports, if you've heard of those reports, I would agree, yeah. in fact, my brother-in-law was in the Persian Gulf War on the Iraqi side. He escaped from Iraq. He's a refugee who came eventually here. He reported to me that there were these triangular craft that were sitting motionlessly in sky and firing from a stationary point. And they could only see them because they blot out the stars. These were actually being used in the Persian Gulf War back in the 90s.
Listen, we've got to take a time out here, but I'm just wondering whether we may have just solved the Stephenville lights or many, many other UFO sightings. Listen, Victor Vigiani needs to collect himself, and so do I. We'll take a quick time out, come back, and continue to discuss secrets of anti-gravity propulsion. It's all right, Victor. It's all right. Back with more of the Richard Serrett Show on News Talk 1010 CFRB. All right, we have picked ourselves up off the floor. Dr. Paul LaViolette with us, author of Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion, just revealing that the B-2 bomber has the capability of flying at Mach 13. Essentially, what you're describing, Dr. LaViolette, could explain a lot of the recent UFO phenomenon.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, they might not all be the B-2. There's a lot of triangular-shaped craft that wouldn't be classified specifically as B-2 bombers. They have various models and designs, I'm sure. This has been going on for decades. They've been working on this in private, sort of like Manhattan Project classification. If you can imagine decades of research and work behind closed doors, so you're going to have all sorts of craft having been developed. I firmly believe these aren't used just around the Earth. I mean, there's actually regular flights throughout the solar system.
All right, let's grab a call here. Let's go to Oakville and say hello to Cameron. Welcome to News Talk 1010, Cameron.
Oh, hi, how you doing? I was just, whenever I hear guys like these guys talk to scientists, they never mention Joseph Kater at all. And, like, the way you guys describe the B-52.
The B-2.
The B-2. That wouldn't be an anti-gravity effect because the Earth's not producing gravity that way with charging everything up, right? That's just a force they're having on, just some sort of extra special force. And basically, the way that Joseph Kater guy explained it is electrons have more propensity to go towards a proton than vice versa. So when you charge up the wings, if you get one charge someplace and another charge the other, the positive or the negative will go more towards the positive.
Okay, I don't want to get too complicated here, but Paul, is that a fair assessment that this is not true anti-gravity technology?
Most of it, I would say maybe 75% of it can be attributed to just electric field effects. But it's anti-gravity in the sense that it works against the gravity field of the Earth in that sense. But there is actual manipulation of gravity, too. I would say maybe 25% can be attributed to that for the electrification of the wing effect.
Okay, I'd like to just bump this up a notch and talk about something that a very good friend of mine more or less cajoled me into addressing with you, is it's the whole idea of the gravity beam propulsion and moving things much, much faster, or at least approaching and even going beyond the speed of light. Could you enlighten us to the point of what this gravitic beam might be all about?
Developed by Eugene Potkonov in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
It's the test model is in Russia, and you have to get clearance to get into the laboratory. And they don't want to let the technology out, I guess probably because of its that it could be applied for military. For example, you could use it to knock satellites out of the sky and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It can be misused, Basically, it discharges these 2 million volt pulses, the test that he was making, through a superconducting disk. And the discharge, even though it ends up smashing against the other electrode, it keeps going, in effect, as a gravity wave out the end. It's sort of like a gravity cannon. It produces a beam of gravity shock waves that is confined. It's pretty much non-diverging. For example, they were able to knock books over at 2 kilometers and even detected its effect at 200 kilometers. So basically, with something like this, you could put a beam between here and the nearest star system and use it to propel a craft. Or you could put it on the craft and be propelling the craft with this, creating its own beam on board.
Could you use such a device to knock over, let's say, 2 very large buildings?
Yes, you could.
All right.
In fact, Podkonoff cranked this up to 10 million volts with sharper discharges and was able to put a hole, 4-inch hole, through a concrete block with it. Also dent a half-inch steel plate. So, I mean, you're talking about huge forces that could be delivered.
Could you bring down the World Trade Centers with it?
Easily. In fact, I believe that a beam weapon could have been used. I mean, when you see the what they talk about, like the concrete pulverizing, that indicates microwave energy.
There's no question this technology then exists.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even it's public that certain of these aircraft companies had microwave transmitters that were putting out, it's in my book, figures, probably gigawatts of power in pulses, very short pulses. So the technology is there, and in fact, there was something, I think a conference where Jacques Vallée was at, and was with another fellow who had worked on some classified programs, and he sort of spilled the beans about what he called the Mylar microwave platform, and Vallée told him in French, taisez-vous, in French, in other words, quiet.
All right.
So these things are out there, apparently.
All right, let's take a quick time out, come back. A few moments remain with Dr. Paul LaViolette and Victor Vigiani from Exopolitics Toronto in studio. Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB. Suddenly, Dr. Judy Wood doesn't seem like someone who's out on the outer fringes of the 9/11 truth movement. We're talking with Dr. Paul LaViolette. Secrets of anti-gravity propulsion, and it would appear that that technology, something capable of bringing down the Twin Towers, does exist. Is it at all related, Dr. LaViolette, to scalar technology that Tesla was, of course, toying around with nearly 100 years ago?
For propulsion. They use it for beam propulsion and spacecraft, but it can also be used to vaporize or heat buildings to the point they collapse. It uses some of what Tesla was toying around with, a technique called phase conjugation. It's able to keep the energy in the beam as a result. Like, for example, a radio station you're broadcasting on, the radio waves go out in all directions and scatter, sort of idea of entropy, you know. With this technology, the electromagnetic waves end up staying confined in a beam. It's more like the phaser beam idea of Star Trek. I mean, a lot of these concepts you hear about in Star Trek actually are viable technologies that have been developed.
All right, we've got news here fast approaching at the top of the hour. Dr. LaViolette will stay with us. Victor Vigiani in studio from Exopolitics Toronto. Secrets of anti-gravity propulsion. Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB.
This is The Richard Serrett Show on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
And we are hanging on to Dr. Paul LaViolette for a spell here, so we will get Neil Gould from Exopolitics Hong Kong on the program at the bottom of the hour. Much still to discuss regarding the secrets of anti-gravity propulsion, Tesla UFOs, and classified aerospace technology. Dr. LaViolette, before I turn you over to Victor here, the idea, some of the things that you're describing makes one have to conclude that the Mercury space program, the Apollo program, and the space shuttle program, all mere window dressing for public consumption.
Right. Yeah. And NASA is basically a cover for the military.
Except that as Victor and I were discussing off air, how many people have died in the Mercury program, the shuttle program, not to mention the European Space Agency? I don't know the Russian and Chinese space programs, because they're still using this antiquated rocket fuel, and it's all totally unnecessary. That sounds like criminal behavior to me.
In fact, I had tried to encourage them to use electrogravitics on the space plane, and I had pointed out to them, this was before the shuttle accident, the Columbia disaster, 13 years before. I told them, you know, it could prevent their heating problem. They were telling me about how they had a heating problem of the hull, or were concerned about during reentry. I said, if there had been research done by Northrop that's explained that this creates an area, protective area around the wing, this electric, high voltage electric charge, that prevents the heating effect. And the fellow who was heading the program I was talking to responded later. I said, have you done anything with it? He said he couldn't generate the interest. So that was the attitude there at NASA, sort of business as usual, and until they got hit in the face with this. And still, even after, you know, I sent in an account of my efforts to the accident, the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, and all I got back was a thank you letter, and that they'd passed my comments on. I never heard from them. Yeah, I even told them I'd be willing to help out. There's just some simple things they needed to do, that stuff that's already been done. You know, in fact, if we put this technology on the commercial aircraft, we could cut the fuel bill to at least one-fourth what it is currently. You know, the airlines were complaining about the high cost of gasoline that was bankrupting them. All they have to do is implement what's already been done. Completely revolutionize air travel across the globe.
So what you're saying, Paul, is that if the average listener to this program is saying, well, I'm taking a trip to Jamaica or St. Lucia, you know, next week, and I've got to pay, $82 for a fuel tax as I leave the airport. What you're telling us just at the beginning of the program, and even now, that the fuel technologies that we are using right now are basically prehistoric, is what you're
right.
saying, is that
right.
that the kinds of technologies that you're describing can be put in place, but the powers that be it the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, or NASA, or whoever it happens to be, who are aware and cognizant of these technologies, just simply, plain, flat out, are not listening.
Well, it's the military.
It's the military.
The aircraft companies have been getting billions of dollars from the military to develop this stuff in secret, but they signed secrecy agreements, and the military won't let them out of it. An example, and this came through a reliable source, was in the Department of Energy. He heard that Boeing wanted to declassify some of the important electrogravitics work it was doing for commercial use,
mm-hmm.
and it was denied. And this was a year ago, okay, before this whole thing hit. You know, so this is what goes on. You know, so the problems are created by humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problems. It's not that problems don't have answers.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a political thing. You know, what's going on? This whole the scenario we have created in the world, it's political. It's not that we don't have the technology. You know, the global warming, all of this, it's going on. The insanity is going on. It's all man-created. It's not the way humanity was supposed to evolve. You know.
All right, let's grab a call here. John in Oakville, you're on the line with Dr. Paulia Violette and Victor Vigiani from Exopolitics Toronto here on News Talk 1010.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to ask, can this technology be used? And number one, why has there been no evidence of journals, like in the physics journals and in the physics magazines, of this technology? Why is it not on the front pages? And number two is, can it be used to supplement our highways through some kind of magnetic levitation system where cars can kind of float over each other if this anti-gravity technology that you speak of actually exists?
Yeah, well, first of all, physics, you have to understand, is not a science. It's a religion. You know, it has certain precepts that have been established in the past, like relativity, quantum mechanics. And any experiments, let's say, even experiments that show results disproving these theories, will be kept out from being published because the referees will unanimously reject a paper. You know, people don't realize that science is mostly political, that the existing viewpoint, the paradigm, keeps itself in power. And even though there's evidence against it, it just doesn't get published, except in journals that are sort of non-mainstream. In my book, I'm very careful to document everything I say. In fact, I bring this technology out. I expose it. There's no reason to keep it secret any longer because it's really been explained here. You know, I give you the path of how to trace back to all the published papers. See, what was your other question was about, can you put this in a car and levitate it?
Yes.
This kind of technology. Yeah, I talk about this in the book. There's what's called the Lafourgue thruster as an example. A Frenchman got a patent on this some decades ago. I guess it's almost a few more years before it expires. Something like this, it develops what are called unbalanced forces, and based on some experiments that have been done, you can do projections that you could develop enough force to lift a vehicle with this. And just need a lot of high voltage AC to do it.
John in Oakville, thank you for that call. I mean, I always love that question. We get on this program, whatever we're discussing, and that is, why haven't I read about this in the newspaper? It continues to reinforce the point that for most people, things don't exist unless they read about it in the front page of the New York Times, and that to me is somewhat discouraging, I guess.
In fact, I'd like to mention another website called archivefreedom.org, and that's a group of people, and I'm one of them, who have been blacklisted by Cornell University's Physics Archive, and when our name comes up, our papers are uniformly rejected, even though they've been published in referee journals. Why? Because some of our ideas are not fitting the paradigm. So this goes on. I mean, people lose their jobs from government positions because, let's say, they might talk about cold fusion, you know, and they get kicked out.
Secrets of anti-gravity propulsion, Tesla UFOs and classified aerospace technology. I'm back with more of the Richard Serrett Show here on News Talk 1010 CFRB. A few moments remain with Dr. Paul LaViolette, the author of Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion. And the website again, www.etheric.com. Is that correct, Paul?
Right.
All right.
If we were to just sort of extrapolate some of the things we've been talking about tonight, Paul, in terms of how some of the things that we've addressed this evening could change how we operate here on the planet on a day-to-day basis, and just in terms of how we function, you know, with our cars and our trains and our buses, and then moving to the level of a spacefaring civilization, how could these technologies advance these kinds of things from the more mundane things we do on the planet to the point where we could travel the stars? Where does that all fit into some of the things you've talked about in the technologies that are available?
Technologies already, I believe, are being applied to interplanetary travel. They've existed for decades. in secret military development.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've already done that, obviously their next goal would be interstellar travel. I believe that projects like that are already in progress. I mean, it's without a doubt, I believe that they have projects for interstellar travel. The whole thing is based on a paradigm shift. Once you start becoming aware of what's been going on, your consciousness basically changes. The things you thought were impossible disappear, and you're operating in a new reality. It's not that your feet are ungrounded. I mean, we're talking about stuff that's attached right to experiment. You've got your feet firmly on the earth, but you're living an entirely different reality of what's possible. As far as what would happen on our planet, it would certainly bring the whole world closer together. I mean, you can imagine going from New York to Sydney, Australia, flight time that would be something like going from the center of town to the suburbs, you know, maybe half an hour. So the whole world would pretty much become one city. It's possible that some countries are worried, you know, because anytime you do something that radical with the technology, you wonder, will we lose control, you know, like customs and all that? How would we control the migration of people? We basically have to overcome fear. If we don't overcome our fear of the future, the present technology could kill us, basically. You know, it's worth the risk to start declassifying these technologies. It would be the biggest shot in the arm we could have right now with the present state of the economy. All the government has to do is start declassing just a few of technologies they've developed.
Well, we are keeping a very close eye on the transition team, John Podesta over in the Barack Obama White House, or what will be the Barack Obama White House, and let's see if, in fact, there is a new Manhattan Project and to explore seriously these alternatives. We can only hope. Dr. LaViolette, we appreciate your time tonight, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much, Richard and Victor.
All right. Again, the book is Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion, Tesla UFOs and Classified Aerospace Technology, www.etheric.com. When we come back...